Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros,
welcome back to another edition of Leaving the Ring Radio. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Mr. Gabriel Montoya. I'm a little off today because Ruben Paul, 713, dude, he just threw me off. I'm starving right now. I'm hungry. And he's over eating caldo over there right now. You know, I'm starving. He said it. Now I have it on my head right now. I want some Mexican soup or something. You know, I haven't eaten all day, man. It's got off of work. Rust over here. Some people thought that we died off again, Gabriel. Can you believe that?
No, man. I mean, follow the show. I mean, you know that life happens to us. We're a couple of blue collar guys at heart, and you got to take some time sometimes. Last week, we both were dead. Like you were at work, and I was dead from like a weekend of doing. I think we did the show like three times or four times. Yeah, it's brutal. So here we are. We're back. It's Monday.
It gets kind of tough, you know. Even though we had a lot to talk about for last week's show, but you know, work calls, and when work's there, you got to take it. I'm one of those really fearful guys that recession could come around the corner at any time. So when somebody says, "Hey, you want to do another job?" I'm like, "Yeah, you know, there's more going back to my savings. Absolutely. Let me jump on it." You know what I mean? So, I shouldn't be that fearful, but I am. You know,
well, you know, I mean, it could be a recession. It could be war with Canada. You know, anything could happen.
Right. Because supposedly they burnt our White House down.
Yeah.
Not that long ago, according to our president and stuff, you know. But hey, that's something to save for another podcast here. Anyways, we definitely have a lot of catch up here on Leaving Arena to talk about. A lot of fights to definitely talk about. A lot of names, a lot of news, big news, I would have to say, that have popped up since our absence here on Leaving the Ring. If you want to call in, certainly can. 347-215-7598. We're going to open up the phone lines in about 15 minutes. I'm gonna let you take the lead here, Gabriel. I know you wanted to talk about something, so here you go.
Well, I was just curious about, you know, the Gennady Golovkin was awarded the Ring Magazine pound belt. And Doug Fisher had talked about, you know, the Pernell Whitaker had it. And then I guess in the 2000s, it had died off, and they're kind of bringing it back. But, you know, his reasoning for having Triple G have that belt is like he's, you know, the longest reigning guy out there. He's staked his claim, you know, at one weight. He's not a weight jumper. He's in terms of title defenses, he's in that, you know, rarefied air, you know, surpassing Monzon and Hagler, I think what matching Hopkins at this point or breaking Hopkins' record, you know, and so he's the guy that at this point is kind of the pinnacle of the sport. But I have to wonder, like, isn't pound for pound, like the original argument was that Sugar Ray Robinson, you know, versus Joe Louis, like if all things were equal, that one would beat the other. And so that became like the pound for pound argument. This is like, well, this guy's doing the best, so he's the best guy. But I kind of argue that maybe there isn't even a pound for pound guy in the sport yet. Like there isn't, like Roy Jones once defined it, you know, and he was a pound for pound guy for years. There's pound for pound number one, and there's everybody else. And I don't know, you look at Vasyl Lomachenko has done so much in such a short period of time. And, you know, people can dog him for the loss, but I mean, you know, it was a tough, close fight and he came on late. He, you know, if it was a 15 rounder, I would have bet on him in that. But he hasn't really staked his claim in like one particular division. There isn't that, to me, that super dangerous guy that was going to beat him that he dominated. Maybe you could say Gary Russell Jr.
Well,
could be that signature win, but time will tell. But
conversation? But I would lean with more Lomachenko than anybody else. I know that everybody wants to stake their claim. I hear your argument. Stake your claim in one division. But to me, Lomachenko is doing exactly what a pound-for-pound guy does. Jump up, jump down, take all. who's available, take the best who's in that division or close to it in the division. I think, you know, the thing about the pound for pound, the reason I've never got into the whole pound for pound, Gabriel, is because the pound for pound is like the Bible. However you read it, your interpretation is what you're going to believe in, you know. That's why they call the ring the boxing Bible. It really depends on what you're looking for. To me, what you said originally, how it was written, is the way it should stay true. The way things have done now, it's really fit the bill for everybody else to have their argument of saying, well, this is the reason why. Like Floyd Mayweather, in my opinion, should never be on that list. He really cherry-picked everybody he wanted to face after he left the lightweight division. You know, after he got that scare with Jose Luis Castillo, I mean, he went great matchmaker. If we want to do great matchmaker pound for pound, Freddie Roach, Floyd Mayweather are up there, in my opinion.
Well, I mean, my larger point was that right now I don't think there is a pound for pound number one. And it's not about just, you know, the weight jumping or not weight jumping. Like it's the quality of the campaign. And while Triple G is, you know, he's been a champion, as Doug pointed out, since 2011. That's, you know, like Tito set the welterweight record holding the IBF title for like 7.5 years at 15 title defenses. So he's definitely in that Hall of Fame era. I'm not trying to like downgrade Triple G or anything like that. But there are also a lot of wins, guys coming up in weight. Kell Brook is probably his biggest, you know, one of his signature scalps. And that guy was coming up from 147 for the first time. You look at this, like the Triple G's last fight, he lost a belt. Everybody's mad about, you know, and Doug talked about this in his interview today on Ring TV, that the IBF, and maybe, you know, Connolly, the lawyer for Jacobs and for Derevchenko, kind of gunning for one client more than the other, or, you know, and kind of pulled the trigger on this. They'd get an easy belt rather than facing Triple G or working their way towards it. I don't know. But regardless of that, I just think, I mean, you know, he just fought Vanes Martirosyan, and then you're going to give him the pound for pound number one thing. Like, he made that choice, regardless of how you feel about any of the politics or that it should have stripped him or not. Like, he's made the decision to chase the big money fight. But then he made also the decision to fight a guy that was an easy out. Like, how many exceptions do you give a guy?
I
and then still
this.
Make him the number one guy.
Yeah,
you know?
But I wonder this. When it comes to the Ring Magazine, not Doug, because, you know, I think at the end of the day, we know, you know, Doug is the editor, but the same, whoever, you know, we know who signed the check.
There's a panel also with these
right.
things, too, of writers,
right.
you know.
Of writers, exactly. I think it's in a way of the rankings. Doug Fisher did get a lot of heat for that, and it wasn't his decision. This could be another way too of like, hey, you know what? We didn't do this, but we're going to do this. We're going to compensate it by bringing back the pound for pound belt.
Well,
I don't know.
And they
Who
did
knows?
Reverse the decision. They did strip
they did.
Canelo of the ring title, and that was, you know, Mr.
But
Friedman.
But it was from heat.
The publisher.
I think there was a lot of heat on it. You know, there were fans that were very disappointed, fans that were outraged about it, about him staying in the rankings. So there was some backlash to it.
There was, but I also I think it was interesting that, you know, for me anyways, when this test came back negative, the hair test, you know, Canelo's result to me said, yeah, it backed up his story. And I think that's where Freeman went. I think a lot of people are like, you know, it's all tied to Golden Boy and this and that. And, you know, maybe that's true, but, you know, average Joe on the street doesn't know if Canelo is the ring champion or not. He's making a publisher decision. And then he reexamined it and said, well, it doesn't say one way or the other, so I'm going to go with the people that suspended him, the people that were overseeing the fight. That's the
right.
higher authority here. That makes sense to me. You know, whether or not I agree, you know, is beside the point. But it makes sense. You know, I don't even think it was just so much the heat, but I mean, maybe the heat made him go back and look at it. But, you know, in this sense, I mean, you know, it's frivolous. I don't really
get it.
I don't
think that he went back for Doug, right? I don't think that he went back for Doug. I think Doug could justify anything that is thrown at him. You know, he's a very intelligent guy. There's a reason why he's the chief editor of the ring. He's the reason why they picked him. I mean, Doug is a encyclopedia of boxing. But I think
he also has a conscience, though. You know, I know it wasn't either way. All of that couldn't have been easy.
I think it was the higher up guys that realized that they got a lot of heat, And Doug Gracely took the punch. He rolled with his punches that were thrown at him,
mm-hmm.
because there was a lot of punches thrown at him. And in truth, the people that are involved in the business or understand the business a little bit more knew that, hey, this is part of the business. Unfortunately, you know, when you swim in mud, you're not like Shane Mosley and Nassim Richardson. You're going to get wet and muddy.
Yeah, it. Well, you know, looking around everything else, it's like you can make the argument for Terrence Crawford or Vasily Lobachenko, but I want to see guys like, you know, not just pick up a belt and maybe defend it once and then get out of there. I want to. I do actually like to see guys take on other champions, unify. To me, that's what. Because there's so many belts, it's like when you unify, you're almost just taking on the other top challengers. And that's how we find out who the real champion is. I want to see more of that before, you know, and you know, Triple G's got most of the belts. But the first belt he picked up was a vacant belt. Here's my last point on it, is just that when all, you know, the argument is all things being equal, but a lot of Triple G's big wins have been fights where he's favored to win. When all things were kind of equal, the Canelo fight and Danny Jacobs, he got arguably a decision that maybe could have gone the other way with Jacobs, and a close, you know, he got a draw against Canelo. Some people say that Triple G won. I'm one of those people. But it's a close fight when you really look at it. So all things being equal in his own division, it's pretty razor thin. So does that tell me that that's a guy that you can place in any division and he'll win? No.
No, and that's why the pound for pound is so difficult. To put a category of guys in there. I mean, look, if that's the way you're looking at it, Lomachenko is one of them. Every time he steps in the ring, he's the heavy favorite. Errol Spence definitely was the heavy favorite of the last, what, of you know, the majority of his opponents.
His whole career.
His whole career, yeah. Terrence Crawford, here's another guy. You know, he's been favored. Anybody you could think of right now, at the moment, I mean, if any that didn't have so much favoritism in his career sometime, if you had a look at it, Manny Pacquiao, yeah. Manny fought a lot of guys. I mean, he was a smaller dude. And that was always the big discussion, was like, okay, how well is this little guy going to take the bigger man's punch? He's moving up another weight. Now, granted that he had weight limitations, you know, there was weight stipulations, but still he was the smaller dude. I mean, looking at Martha, you know, if you go look at right now, like Daniel Roman, right? Everybody was super excited, and my only thought of watching that fight was they brought up Martha, but these guys really did test themselves. They really did seek to fight the better oppositions out there. You know, I think we're in such an era of building a superstar without really testing how bright the star can be lit.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it was beating Julius Ndongo. That's significant for Terrence Crawford, certainly, you know, picking up all mm-hmm. the belts and just the manner in which he did it. Victor Postol, beating that guy that people thought was going to be a tough opponent. I mean, I think he's got a solid case, you know, to be a top guy in the way he's moving up. But I just want, you know, I'd like to see him settle in and be in one spot. And
out of the three guys right now we talked about, let me see, Triple G, Terrence Crawford, Lomachenko, out of those three right now, if you had a pound for pound, who'd be on the top of your list?
Errol Spence. I don't know. I think Crawford has a good case for himself, all the belts he's collected. But it's also great timing, you know. I think he's going to be a beneficiary like that in the welterweight division because Spence has more belts in his universe than Crawford does. So it's up to Crawford to just become must-see TV, which he is. I don't know if that's, you know, I guess must-watch app. Is what he is.
By the way, I like that app. I really do.
I did too.
I like
too.
The fact
I've
that
heard
I can
people
stand.
Complain.
You know what? Right.
It's fine.
If people are complaining about it, let me tell you this, okay? When it's a Friday night or Saturday, and you have to go somewhere with the family, and you hate DVRing because you know that social media is going to blow up your timeline and you're going to see all the notifications. No matter how hard you try not to, unless you shut off your phone, the app is great. I'm standing in line. Well, the family's buying stuff, or I'm sitting on a chair that I'm not supposed to be sitting at the mall, and I'm watching the fights. I enjoy the app. I really do.
Yeah, dude.
I love it. Okay.
Especially, I'm getting ready for the show or whatever, and I can have my phone. I got the Watch ESPN app and all that on my phone, and it's just backstage can have headphones on and just keep up with the fights because I like to see the undercards. I want to see all the other fights, not just the main events. I want to know who's coming up.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's a great way of keeping up with everything. But going back for the pound for pound, I'm with you. I like Crawford. I'm nose to nose for me is Lomachenko, and Lomo has really won me over. If you fall leaving the ring, that I've never been a Lomo guy. There's just a lot of questions that I had that surrounded him, and if you know me, if you followed me for 8-10 years, you would know that I'm the kind of guy that doesn't like to see another superior boxer play with his food. I hate that. If Errol Spence went out there and did exactly what you're supposed to do to a guy that's four levels below you, you blow him out, get him out of there. Why bore us to death? Just end it. At one time in the 90s, early 90s, everybody hated Mike Tyson because you paid for a pay-per-view and he went out there and he did his job. But the majority of the time when you paid for it, you knew, dude, there's a great chance he's only going to last a minute or maybe 3 minutes or maybe even two rounds, 6 minutes of boxing, not even boxing, brawling, and the guy's going to get laid out. I guess that's embedded in me. You know what I mean, Gabriel? Where I know if you can outclass a guy, take him out. Get him out of there. With Lomachenko,
yeah.
What I've noticed with him is that I've now accepted the fact that he doesn't have this KO power. What he has to do is he's almost like an escape artist. I went to Alcatraz, so I'm going to use this analogy here because I went over there for Father's Day, man. Thank you, kids. Thank you, everybody, for taking me out there. I'm a Frank Morrison I read the books about him, everything. But, okay, so Frank, this guy, Lomachenko's an escape artist. You got to test everything. You got to see what's weak, what barrier it can be penetrated. That's what Loma does. He penetrates to see, okay, where's the weak link out of everything here so that I can start tapping away. And then that's what I like. So Terrence Crawford is a bit different, completely different. He's a sniper. He shoots for it. It doesn't work. He adjusts, and he shoots again at another area. So both guys, to me, are nose-to-nose.
Now, I love the way Crawford fights, man. The fluidity, the confidence, the presence, the way he dismantled Jeff Horn. I mean, I think they probably could have stopped it after the eighth. He just got submitted, beaten to the point where he just lost all his offense. I mean, I thought, Robert Byrd was a little overly officious. Got right in there and really dictated what kind of fight it was going to be. There was going to be no holding. There was going to be no Jeff Horn grab you on one side, hit you on the other side, rough you up and move you around. Because it's funny, it's like Crawford talked about. He did. He tried it, but Byrd was having none of it. And Crawford talked a lot about that. Like everybody said he was going to be stronger than me, but I was a stronger man. But that also kind of discounts how Robert Byrd was officiating the fight. It's easy. It's good. You're going to be stronger if you've got the third man in the ring constantly breaking up the action and admonishing your opponent, before that guy gets to work at all. So but still, it was a brilliant performance. And that was about what I thought of Jeff Horn. He made some, a little bit of money, got the title, won some money, made some money. And now he moves forward into who knows, maybe he can be a guy that gets beat up in the PBC. I don't see him getting another title anytime soon. His division is just full of wolves.
Yeah, it's not like the division where Leo Santa Cruz and Morris are at, where it's murderous row. There's nothing really there. Those guys can stay very active. Morris had got a loss for the second time in a rematch. They said about something about a third match, but I'd rather see Santa Cruz go after Russell, Gary Russell Jr. And Morris is still, to me, he's still in the game. So, yeah, Horn, I don't know what he's going to do. You know, if he doesn't learn more than what he showed us on that last Saturday night on the ESPN Plus app, I don't see no reason for anybody unless they want to showcase for, like, Sean Porter. Let's say Sean Porter is the third man out on PBC and they need a body. Horn and him can go at it, headbutt. It's going to be gruesome. You're going to find out who's the stronger, really the stronger welterweight. Referee, I like what you said right now, because you know what? It brings up a good point that I was actually having a conversation with somebody. You're not the first person that mentioned about Bird, referee Bird, kind of stopping the action for Horn. You know, anytime they got close, if there was any grappling, it was immediately stopped. We've seen Bird do that before, but we've seen this when it comes to either the star or potential star, where the ref tries to make sure there's not too much physicalness where there can be a head clash or anything. They try to avoid that. You know, maybe to keep the fighter preserved, keep him fresh, to keep him going for the, you know, next, what, 6 months if they're going to get back into the ring, or if there's some big money fight down the line for negotiations. We don't know. I don't really know. But it is kind of weird how we see that. You know, we saw that a lot with Floyd Mayweather fights. You know, Kenny Bayless would intervene right away. We especially saw that with Madonna, that's rematch. He intervened right away, made sure, you know, that there wasn't too much mauling in there. And now with this one, with Terrence Crawford and Horn. But I still saw the more stronger guy was Crawford. You know, he was able to push him back, throw him off. We saw that. You know, he just pushed him right off, you know. And that was something that a lot of us were kind of curious about, you know. So I don't know. That was an interesting point that you threw out.
He's gonna fill in nicely, I think, at that weight. I think that's where he belongs. And what's interesting, you know, is that we're looking at this showdown between him and Errol Spence in the future. I mean, I think, you know, like Errol said before the fight, you know, there's two belts in my universe that I need to go get. I think he's referring to the WBC belt that Porter and Garcia are going to be fighting over. And then there's, you know, the Keith Thurman belt that Lucas Matisse also has a piece of.
Right.
So, you know, before he needs to go after Terrence Crawford, he needs to get those. But looking at the fight, just, you know, projecting forward, it's interesting that, you know, Crawford fights mainly and seems very comfortable fighting out of southpaw. Like, he sees things that he apparently doesn't see when he's fighting orthodox, and maybe is, you know, invulnerable in a way that he doesn't feel, you know, quite on the other side, or maybe he just doesn't want to see the rest of the sport see what he looks like on there for too long. He's kind of hiding himself a little bit now that he's at the top in a different division, and that the right hand will be a different look for an Errol Spence. It's weird. It's like a faux southpaw versus a career southpaw in Errol Spence when that fight goes off. And I have to think that Errol, I give him the edge just because he's more comfortable on that side. But then again, you know, he doesn't face a lot of southpaws, so maybe it's a weakness. I don't know. Who do you edge in this fight early on? Just, you know, we're looking at 2 years, you know, before this fight happens, I think.
You know, I think 2 years, even if it does happen, I think it's going to juice up even more. Both guys are going to have more experience. Crawford definitely shows the experience he has as a southpaw. Spence, though, does exactly what I was talking about earlier in comparison with Lomachenko. Lomo likes to play with his food. Spence doesn't. He goes out there. He knows if a guy is below a level in him, he takes him out exactly the way he's supposed to. What I like about Spence is that he does have the welter power. You could see it. And he knows how to place his punches really good. I mean, he sees openings pretty clear. And he mm-hmm. takes advantage of it really fast. You know, there's no hesitation. Some guys you could see where they have to kind of look for it. And that's why I see Crawford. Crawford looks for when he needs to place the punches to create damage or openings. Spence sees it and he executes. Big difference there. You know, I was. I'm pretty sure you're the question of Horn being thrown at you. What do you think Spence would have done with Horn in terms of how Crawford dealt with him? I honestly think Spence would have took out Horn a lot faster. I think that he would have saw exactly what Horn brought to the table, saw that Horn only likes to lead with his head, probably would have caught him coming in. And so I guess my answer to anybody asking me this question again, who's more of a true welterweight puncher? I lean with Spence. And two years from now, if Spence continues to get more experience, not what he's been given now, because, I mean, right now what he's been given, it's just, God, it's a shit show. You know, I was
Carlos
not even Ocampo interested in watching.
It was a mandatory for the IBF, but it was a mismandatory, as they say. It was grim, man.
It was really grim. Terrible.
I remember just watching tape of Ocampo and going, this guy is stuck. He's going to be – my call was Spence easy, you know, because he just
right. –
you could see the guys – He was beating his developmental foes the way, you know, you should, but real leaky guard, kind of slow. There was nothing about him that said he was going to beat Errol Spence Jr. And we saw that. He just got overwhelmed and then just killed to the body. And Spence is just, I don't know if you saw that clip on the internet of him bare knuckle boxing with somebody, just like going to the body. Very few people can sneak around elbows like that and in between your guard to get to your body like Errol Spence Jr. can. And it's really a thing of beauty. He's a punisher down there. It's a lost art in some ways. And I love watching him fight too. I kind of lean towards I've liked him since the amateur. So in the fight, I kind of lean towards him. But there's something about the way Crawford fights that he just seems open to the moment and willing to change. Everything, you know, his stance, his approach. Like you said, we'll find out more about them. I want fewer showcase fights, but it sounds like that's, you know, what Spence wants is fewer showcase fights and more unifications. Pick up those belts, become more of a star, and somebody gets crowned in Spence versus Crawford.
I think out of both the guys, who's going to be able to gain more, championship rounds in the welterweight division is going to be Spence. But, I mean, think about it. He defeats Horn, who Bud was supposed to beat, outbox, and knock out. Was, from defeating that guy, is now considered the best welterweight in the world, which is kind of weird. I don't think we won't know. He's not going to be able to fight Danny Garcia. He's not going to be able to fight Keith Thurman or Sean Porter. Those guys belong to PBC.
Well, what he's got,
call Al Heyman, right?
What Crawford has, he's got Jose Benavides, which is probably that's a good bet sooner rather than later. But then at number two, he's got Manny Pacquiao. He will now be probably elevated to number one in the WBO, and then he's got Kavaliskas behind that. And then Danny Garcia, if he comes out on the losing end, at least has a lottery ticket over here in the WBO.
If you had to put a list for Crawford right now, in-house is Manny Pacquiao, Jose Benavides Jr. Out of the outhouse with PBC, I don't think that's going to happen. If anything, Eddie Hearn steps up and says, hey, I can't make anything happen between Brooke and Khan. Crawford, that's a big fight between those two. To me, that's more realistic. That's why I'm saying Spence, to me, is going to get more of the experience fighting the tougher oppositions that is available than where Crawford and his team are going to have to struggle to find some good competition and wait.
Yeah, no, it's kind of slim pickings. But I'm curious, if with their competing stream services, though, Crawford's on the app on ESPN Plus and the ESPN platform with Top Rank, is Khan going to be off of DAZN or, what's he going to be doing? Or DAZN, rather, with Hearn. So is he going to be cross-pollinating? I think everybody's kind of locked in, I think it was Kurt Emhoff said that Evan Rotowski, Aficionados, it's like you wish that it was one of them said it. I think it was Kurt that they wish that the, all these streaming services would invest in the sport as opposed to individual promoters with, you know, with their individual stables that are not, no one has a stable deep enough to, you know, if Al Heyman couldn't pull it off with all that, all the fighters that he signed, that was like the biggest stable out there. So it seemed like 200 plus guys. If he wasn't able to do it on his own, what makes all these streaming services think that these guys are going to do it on their own and corner the market? Maybe cornering the market isn't the goal, but it just seems like everybody, that's a whole other conversation. But yeah, for a guy like Terrence Crawford also, I mean, are you, you know, they asked him this in the Breakfast Club and he kind of handled it, but would you really want to be the test pilot on the app at this point in your career? You're like 28. You know, like they know that the numbers are probably not high.
No, I mean, Evan mentioned this on Aficionados. It's even 2 years, it's not going to be significant enough to build a subscriber base. It's going to take time. You know, that's why the whole question, like HBO out of the boxing business. Well, they invested on their subscribers, you know, so they really don't need boxers, you know, boxing fans to keep them floating, you know, above to survive. They got so many other folks that subscribe to HBO for other reasons, you know. So when it comes with DAZN and them, yeah, I mean, it's going to be a tough breakthrough. It is going to be tough. I mean, it's as much as, you know, you get fans right now, and I understand what fans are saying. I'm spending money here. I'm putting, you know, $30 here, $5 here. It starts to add up and become very expensive.
It's not easy. I mean, you know, ESPN was already losing subscribers as a channel.
Right.
And then they're trying to move into the future. And I agree with Crawford, and we've been saying this for a long time, that it's streaming. We're part of that revolution on Blog Talk Radio. But, you know, also, I remember streaming back when it was just Justin TV for Fighter versus Writer and all that. So, you know, we've talked about this. This is where TV is going. And it's, you talk to the younger generation, and it's like they don't even really watch regular TV. They watch Twitch, you know, they watch YouTube. I mean, you have kids, you know, I don't need to tell you, but still, like, yeah, you know, are they going to do this with Lomachenko as well? Is he going to be a test pilot too? Or does he get to be on regular ESPN? I'm curious about that.
Well, he was on the ESPN Plus, on the ESPN.
Oh, that last one was. You're right. My bad. But it was like it was also, I think both of them are like the free sign up, and then you can like get rid of it. But I've kept it. I like it. Like I'm always on the
I like it a lot.
So I need the streaming service. So I like the Showtime app, you know, the same thing. You know, it's live and that's definitely what I need. HBO still not caring. Still just doing
well,
something
they're not
else.
I mean, like I said, their subscriber base was never based on boxing. Showtime have always wanted to be the front runners between the two networks, so they worked really hard on being those front runners. They finally got there. They won the race. They won the race because the other guy just got tired of running circles around the other dude, you know, around Showtime. I think that's what happened. So I'll be surprised to see what next move HBO does. I mean, I think it's just going to be the end RIP for them eventually. And I think they're going to be fine with it. It's not, you know what I mean? I think HBO is going to be fine with it. It's not like they really need boxing fans to keep them around. I don't think we bring enough, unfortunately.
Well,
to keep
and things are, you know, are going to change at HBO now that the big merger, the Time Warner, AT&T, goes through, right? Merger. So now, you know, it's going to be new leadership, new approaches. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see who keeps their jobs and where they place, do they place value on that? You know, will they update their streaming service to go live for events? I mean, since, you know, boxing used to be a flagship part of HBO, will they value that? I'm really curious to see. That just, you know, happened this last week. So it's going to take time, but, you know,
and
usually,
who would have thought? Let me ask you this. Who would have thought? Because, you know, if we would have talked about this, let's say 5 years ago, Okay. Remember this, ESPN is in more homes than HBO. And it's 5 years ago, everybody used to say, if ESPN wanted to take over boxing, they certainly can. But now ESPN is in this position where they're like, we got to do something new, or we're not going to even have a network.
Yeah.
And they're doing that. Where HBO is like, well, do we want to be in boxing? I don't know.
They don't need to be in boxing, you know?
We don't need to be in boxing. That's the crazy part.
They've created some of the greatest shows, you know, Deadwood, The Wire. It's, you know, now like Westworld, Game of Thrones, which is like more than just a show. It's a phenomenon. Yeah. How do you, you know, people go crazy for that shit. How do you care about boxing that much? You know, it's kind of a nice, you know, little bump,
if
I guess.
Have
if you
a guy
do good
that's
pay-per-view.
Enthusiast. Right. Especially if you don't have a guy that's in this chair, that's like a boxing person, a guy
well,
that
I think,
gets excited.
I think Peter is. I think we saw some action fights because of his. You know, Kirkland Angulo was definitely his. You know, but I think he's hamstrung by budgetary concerns and where
right.
the current establishment values the sport. I mean, they you know they kind of let themselves get devalued. You know, during the Kerry Davis period of time, where you know that where Al Haymon kind of comes out of all that.
Well, they got
so,
devalued by acting like promoters, too. That's where they end up screwing themselves over. When they started acting like they were promoters themselves, rather than letting the promoters just produce what they thought was a good match, HBO was like, no, we don't want that guy. We want the guy that looks like a star, that has the look. You know, they got Oscar De La Hoya, who had the movie star looks, and Roy Jones of the world, and they were like, oh, this is what we want. This is the panel of what we're looking for. Whereas, you know, before all that, you had Eric Morales and Barrera go at it. You had you had some great matches. I mean, there's a match in my head right now. What's his name? You had Paulie Ayala versus Johnny Tapia. Great match. I mean, you had a lot of great matches. There's another fight in my head. I can't remember their names right now. I could see their faces in my head, but I can't throw it out there. We were talking about them a little earlier. They'll come to me anyways. But hey, you want to pass in some fight fans really quick before we start talking about Jamal Charlo and Canelo and Triple G?
Yeah, 503 rather. You're live on the next on Leave It in the Ring. 503-503.
Are you there, brother?
I'll go 510. You're live on Leave It in the Ring.
Hey, Gabe. Hey, Dave. I'm over here. How you guys doing?
Hey, what's up, man?
Not much. The first Pacquiao Marquez fight was on HBO, on regular HBO.
That's
I remember
right.
That.
Yep.
Oh, shit. That's right. That's right.
Yeah,
that was right after he stopped Barrera. So yeah.
Yep, right after he stopped Barrera. Yep, and Marquez was supposed to be like a lamb to the slaughter at that one, and it turned out to be a really good fight. And I think Margarito versus Paul Williams was on regular HBO. They had some really good fights. You know, they used to have good fights on regular HBO, but honestly, I wonder going forward if it's actually better for the sport if they move on from HBO and you know, like. For them, they're a content company like Netflix now. You know, their priority is like to have stuff that people can watch over and over and over again. And boxing is a lot of them. You know, it's awesome. You know, for commercials and everything else. But as far as content, you can't watch. You know, people aren't going to be watching the same fight months later or whatever. You know, unless you're like a diehard like us. You know, so that's probably why they're you know they don't really consider like content they can hold on to. I have a question. What did you guys think about like these football teams and also like Oklahoma City Thunder getting involved in boxing. I think that's a good thing, you know, like with Dallas Cowboys this weekend. And I think next month the Thunder are putting the Alex Saucedo fight on also, you know, and it seems like it's doing really well. Is that a good avenue for the sport?
I mean, I think cross-pollination is always kind of a good thing. You get into a new pool of people and try to pull them into your thing, you know. I think it's a good marketing strategy. You know, I don't know if it's a trend. You know, we'll see. But that's you know, I didn't know about the Oklahoma Thunder. You know, you know what's weird is like the older I get, like the others, the less sports I follow. I follow boxing, but like even like as like the city's going crazy about the Golden State Warriors, like I just stopped like watching basketball like a long time ago. Like, well, specifically when Kobe had his incident in Colorado, and then I met him like I think before that, and he was kind of a jerk, and that kind of just turned me off to the whole thing, both those events. But yeah, I don't know. You know, cross pollination is. I wonder the guy that's really going to be able to successfully market boxing and MMA together, and if they really even go together. But maybe that's a different question. What'd you think of Crawford and Spence?
You know, my favorite part, I know you guys were on last week. My favorite part of I got the ESPN Plus, and I actually got the yearly membership because it's a little bit cheaper. It's like $50 a year, kind of like Max Boxing was back in the day. Max Boxing was like $5 a month or $50 a year. I did the same thing. Yeah, I don't know if everybody remembers that, but yeah, and I got free T-shirts.
And maybe a shirt.
Yeah, I got one.
I never got my shirt.
It was like two sizes too small. I got one like a year later. It was like two
sizes. At least you got a shirt. I never got mine. I actually had an email a few times. I gave him like, hey, I got my shirt.
They're all
I gave him so he was happy. Yeah. Honestly, my favorite part of the whole thing, again, with the ESPN Plus app, was watching the undercard, surprisingly. Like, I was really interested in, like, that kid from Stockton I had never seen fight before. I can't remember his name offhand. He was wearing those Warriors color shirt shorts, the blue and gold. That guy impressed me. And then Shakur Stevenson, I wasn't a big fan of his early on, man. It seemed like he was a little bit feather fisted, and now he seems like he's starting to get some man strength. And he looks like he throws some hard punches now. And he got rid of the grunting, like the amateur grunting. You know, when they throw punches, he got rid of that.
Yeah, right.
I'm actually kind of impressed with him. Yeah. So I really like the ESPN Plus app.
He's developing nicely, you know. Good balance on him. Seems to have a killer instinct in there. You know, I want to see him have some resistance now. Somebody punch back a little bit. Somebody that can take his shot, you know. But yeah, no, I'm kind of warming to him a little bit.
David, do you know anything about that kid from Stockton? Who is that guy? You know, I've never even heard of that kid. He looks like he has a lot of talent. I have to probably Google his name, but he was on the undercard.
Is it about Gabe
really
Flotus Jr.?
Maybe that's who it was. Yeah, maybe that's
yeah.
who it was, man. He looks like
he's good.
A talented kid, man.
He's very
yeah,
good.
Yeah.
I saw him come out and spar out at Undisputed Fight Gym out in San Carlos. Yeah, man. He's got real tools, you know, real nice technique to him. I think he's starting to settle in. And really, you know, fight in a professional manner, really dig into his punches. I think he's got some upside to him. I was really impressed.
Yeah, he's got to keep his head clear, you know, just not let outside distractions get involved with them. You know, that's the one thing about him and his camp is that there can be some outside distraction. So hopefully he stays on the right track and you know, unfortunately, when you got family involved, the influence can be bad. It's not always positive. That's all I could say.
Yeah, definitely. We all know that, right? You know, we got cousins getting in trouble or family, whatever.
Right.
Another too, like speaking about the ESPN Plus app, a few years ago, like I was always into wrestling when I was younger, and I had grown out of it, right? I got married and I got out of it, right? And then when the WWE app came along, I got it just to watch the old stuff, right? And then I got into the new stuff.
Right.
Yeah, but I got into the new stuff all of a sudden. I started getting into the new stuff, and I'm wondering if that could have the same effect as boxing. You know, maybe it could be so convenient, and it could expose you to more fighters, which it did to me. I'm a hardcore boxing fan. I had never really seen that guy from Stockton. I'm over here in Richmond. I'd never heard of that guy. You know, and I'm kind of excited to watch him again. You know, and then so I just think it's a good thing. You know, like more exposure for these fighters. You know, and easier access. You know, and
the exposure is it's going to take time. You know what I mean? Like, I know like right away, that's where ESPN's got to really sit back or even DAZN, all these other guys. I see guys on YouTube doing videos going like, it's not going to work and blah, blah, blah. And everybody's panicking. The thing is that these things are going to have to take time because just like you mentioned, you know, what I like about ESPN Plus is they do throw a lot of old classic fights, even like their documentaries of old school fights. And to me, that's a great way of attracting somebody that's never actually has even bothered to even look up the history of the sport. You know, if you're in the baseball and you come across 30-30 and you see Tommy Morrison, you're like, oh, let me check this out. You know, let me see what this guy's all about. And you see his story and you like it. And then you have a chance to watch some of his fights on that that app. That's a good thing. Then it kind of leads you into watching the fights. But is it something that's going to happen right away? No. And I think ESPN, even DAZN, they understand that. It's not going to happen right away. It's going to take a time to develop, to push out there. You know, like Evan Rakowski from Aficionados, he pointed out in one of his episodes, I think it was episode 10, was, you know, like Netflix, they still to this day right now don't have a return on their money. They're spending more money than making back. They're not making anything at the end because they're so concentrating on their subscriber base. And that's what these apps basically have to do, is really concentrate on their subscriber base. They're going to lose a lot of money before they get anything back. But it's a great way, too, for the app. The guy that controls the app, which is ESPN or DAZN, they have direct control and direct relations to their subscribers. So they'll know who's watching and who isn't. So to me, I've said this. This is a great way for promoters that want to get involved with these apps and host their fights on here for them to really now step up matchmakers, to really kind of put a scare in them, because if nobody's tuning into these fights because you put up, let's say, four shitty fights, now everybody's like, oh, dude, 44 fights, I'm done. That's it. That's all it takes for fight fans, you know? I'm not going to spend another $5 for a month to watch four shitty fights in a row. I'm bored out of my mind. So that's going to, to me, that puts kind of a fire under the ass of a matchmaker and the promoter, because now ESPN could say, hey, I'm not going to give you, you know, site fee money or anything. I'm not going to pay money for this fight if it's not any good. You need to give me good fights. In order for our app to continue to have life in it, you got to give me something where people are going to buy to give it life. So that's why I'm for this app. I'm for the apps, because it should make a major change, and it also is going to create a new fan base of new fans and people that are going to watch the sport.
Generation,
exactly. You know, we're losing these generations. I mean, we're not even losing them just with the fight game. We're losing them in the workforce, you know, in blue collar force.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody wants to be
definitely.
A carpenter. Nobody wants to be a plumber. Nobody wants to be a cop, a firefighter, or, you know, work in the hospital. Nobody. Everybody wants to be an engineer or something really fast to make, you know. So the app to me is a great way of just kind of, it's a great way to humble not just the fight fans, but a great way to humble the promoters and the matchmakers, in my opinion.
I really enjoy Evan's podcast also. It's super interesting, really well done, and shout out to Evan too, man. I really enjoy it. Another thing too is like also with pay-per-views, right?
I love it.
The pay-per-views on there. They don't have to give half to the cable company, right? Of the $100 that we're paying for the pay-per-view fight, half of it goes to the cable company. Maybe they could lower the price point a little bit and make it more affordable for even more people. You know, you still have to pay a little extra for the Crawford versus Spence fight. Maybe instead of paying $100 for it and only 100,000 people buy it, maybe you get it for $30 and much more people can afford it, more people are willing to buy it, you know? So I think going forward is actually a good thing, you know?
I think so too. And you know what? I know a lot of folks don't like Al Haymon, but you got to give credit where it's due. Al got away from the pay-per-view. You know, the old pay-per-view model. And if you really look at it, he didn't bother with it. He allowed other promoters, like, for instance, like, you know, like Bob Arum or Golden Boy. Hey, you want to put it on pay-per-view? Go right ahead. Because he wanted his direct money, and that's what he got. He got his direct fund. He didn't want to be the middleman. He didn't want to be the guy waiting to see if money came for him, you know? So he allowed, like, Showtime and everybody else to do the whole pay-per-view thing. To me, that kind of woke and shook other people to realize, hey, we really don't need pay-per-view. We can go a different direction, you know, but maybe not in the direction of screwing the fans, because we kind of fell short the way Al did it, you know, because in all reality, Al was very smart. He saw something that was fractured. He saw something he could take advantage of. He saw that you know what, nobody's going to look behind the backs by the time he's gone, and he did it. So I give him credit for what he did, because it did kind of wake up the rest of the world, boxing world, to kind of realize they got to do something different.
Well, I don't think it's any coincidence that the last few pay-per-view stars have all been from Generation X, right? De La Hoya, Mayweather, Pacquiao, right? Nowadays,
right.
You know, the whole new generation, they're not interested in paying for pay-per-view at all, man. I mean, if they're smart enough to do Twitter and all this crap, right, they're smart enough to get it on the stream. You know, they're not going to pay for it anyways, you know? They're not going to pay for it anyways. So, like, the only people that pay for pay-per-views are people like our age or paisas, you know, basically. You know, but the people on Twitter,
yeah.
The people that are complaining about the pay-per-views, they're not paying for it anyways. You know,
no,
they're
going
to get it for free anyways. Now, you know? Yeah, they're ripping it off, man. People crying about the pay-per-views and stuff, they're going to rip it off anyways, man. You know, I just shut up already, man. But, hey, thank you for taking the phone call. I know you guys gave me plenty of your time, man. I appreciate it, man.
Hey, no problem.
Hey,
thank you,
enjoy the show. I'm glad you guys are back, man. Thank you.
Peace.
Appreciate
Thanks,
it,
man.
Peace. All right.
You know, I mean, you even think about it. Generation X here, Gabriel. Floyd Mayweather, De La Hoya, all these guys, even Manny Pacquiao. You got to give it up for Manny, because Manny could have stuck to his guns and said, I don't want to be on an app. I want pay-per-view. But he understands his money's going to come anyways. It doesn't really matter where it's being filtered from. It's going to show up. It's going to be there, even though there are rumors that there is problems right now of the Lucas Matisse Manny Pacquiao fight happening.
Proof of funds.
Yep, proof of funds then. You know, but I mean, it just kind of shows you that these fighters still can get paid. It doesn't need to be pay-per-view money. The fighters don't get any. I mean, unless they negotiated like Floyd, and that's why Floyd stuck to his guns with his pay-per-view, is because he does get the what do you call it? Help me out, Gabriel. Because after everything's said and done, after the date, after the ticket sales from the gates and whatnot, the back end of money's going to come in. There's a term for it. I just can't think of it right now. And he'll get it. He'll end up getting that money. That it could take up to 3-5 years, but he'll get a check every year.
His
he'll
residuals.
Get a big slum of money. His residuals. There you go. Ooh, God, I knew I had it. residuals. Yes, that's what he was looking and banking on. You know. So,
well, I think, you know, yeah, I mean, Manny,
but that's not guaranteed either.
No,
that's not guaranteed. A lot of you don't know that either. You know, we've spoken to so many different promoters that talk about pay-per-view. We've talked to them off the air, sat down with them, and they'll tell you a lot of times, sometimes if a guy doesn't want to pay their bill, well, not only the network loses out on getting paid, the promoter and the fighter end up losing out and getting paid.
Yeah, so I mean, it's, you know, I'm curious. I was really excited to see that fight, but it seemed a little too good to be true, you know, and a little
I'm
bit.
I'm still hopeful.
Yeah.
We've talked about this, you know, in terms of where Manny's at in his career. I think it's a good fight for him. Let's patch in another fight fan here on Leave It in the Ring.
All right, 405. You're live on Leave It in the Ring.
How you guys doing today?
Doing well.
Good, brother. How you doing?
Doing good. Santos from Oklahoma.
Hey, what's up, man?
Not
How
much.
You doing, Santos?
Doing good. A little while ago, when y'all brought up the Jeff Horn and Sean Porter fight, you know how they both do kind of like the football jib move in the ring?
Right? Yeah.
Can you imagine both of them doing it at the same time?
I can. And it'd be really brutal, you know? You know what's funny is that when the fight was happening and Timothy Bradley was commentating, I was going to tweet it, but I was like, nah, I'll leave it alone. But I was like, you imagine if Timothy Bradley was still around and Jeff Horn went at it, you know, it'd be the, you know, a clash of heads all the way, both for both of those guys, you know.
Just one long clinch, you know.
One long Hallmark commercial. That's what you guys would get.
You have to let like Steve Smoker be the ref so that he could just let him work it out, you know, not break him at all.
I think we could definitely say that if Jeff Horn and Sean Porter got in, the hug fest would make Javier Fortana look like an amateur on his fight against Granado. You know, I wouldn't want to watch it, but. But anyways, man, what's on your mind, brother?
No, Now we're going to talk about the Terrence Crawford and Errol Spence fight. Because the more skill, but Errol Spence is skilled, but he's big and strong. But I'm not sure who I would favor, but Errol Spence is, like you said, Gabe, earlier today, like that body attack is vicious. It's like, and he gets around those elbows pretty good.
Yeah. He just, you know, I mean, so, you got to body up on somebody to make your strength count, but like, he looks like he's going to head to 154 at some point. I don't think Crawford goes up there. I could be wrong, you know. That's kind of how I'm also picking, you know. It just
I don't
seems
know.
Like
he hasn't looked like
man.
He feels that, though. Even as a welterweight, he still looks like he could pack on some pounds.
Yeah, perhaps.
You know?
I mean, how old is he? Was he 28?
I don't know. Let me look it up. Yeah.
I've got it.
I think Crawford's 30.
Is he that old at this point? Yeah, he is 30. Jeez. It still feels like they're building him, even though he's got all those belts. Like, doesn't it still feel like you're waiting for the career to kick in?
Yeah,
he
looks like it.
He hasn't had that defining fight, that adversity. I mean, maybe that comes from being that good, but, you know, I don't know. I feel like he hasn't really planted his flag at a division and defended that flag enough times.
Yeah, it's kind of like you said earlier today, like, no matter who you put these guys in the ring with, like, they're favored over a lot of people, you know what I mean? Like, in my opinion, I think Crawford beats everybody at 147 except for Errol Spence. I think Errol Spence is the guy that beats him, but I think he takes care of Thurman pretty good and everybody else.
I think what you guys just mentioned, that's why we feel like his career hasn't, you know, seems like it's been that long because of the oppositions, you know, and because you got to kind of sit back and see, okay, who's he going to face next? It's very slim in his pickings.
Yeah, like, I mean, yeah, I guys had talked about earlier, like, Jose Benavidez, like, I don't really want to see that fight, and I know we're probably going to get it next, but I don't want to see it.
I know. Who wants to see that one? I mean, I like Jose, too, but I'm sitting there. I mean, he was on the undercard, and I was like, oh, man. I mean, he's strong, but let's not forget, the last time he stepped up, it wasn't very entertaining. You know, and there's nothing right now that shows me that he can be really competitive against Crawford. I don't know if you guys see any. I just don't see him being competitive at all.
I think he gets stopped. I think he would get outclassed.
Yeah.
He has so many bad habits, and it's, you know, I just don't think he's in the same. He doesn't have the same skill set. It's not the same class as Terrence Crawford. I think it would show.
How does Benavidez?
You know, they really did try with Benavidez, you know, but there was a lot of injury. I mean, he shot himself. I mean, the guy was out of the ring for how long? I mean, what are you going to do with the kid? I mean, right now he's acting like a guy that has a chip on his shoulder, but of course you got a chip on your shoulder, you know? But is it enough? Is there a story there to even make it intriguing? I don't even see a storyline there that goes, hey, I want to see this fight. There's real bad blood between these two, you know? I just don't see it.
He's 26, so he still has time to develop, Benavidez. But I get the sense that he's the guy, that he is who he is, you know?
He's been with Top Rank since he was 18. He signed with them when he was 17. Remember this.
Yeah.
And this is how long it's been, and he still hasn't really done much in his career with Top Rank at this moment. I mean,
Except get hurt.
And shoot himself?
Because I remember Bob Arum hyping him up big time. Like,
oh,
he was
big
supposed
time.
To be like the next Floyd Mayweather when it was.
Yeah, I mean,
and this
felt
like a long time. That's why I was asking his age.
Exactly. And he was doing great sparring at the wild card. Freddie Roach talked him up a bunch. But
I saw him, spar Amir Khan. I think it was might have been Khan's first sparring session or his first sparring session there at the wild card. And it was. Yeah, the kid had talent. It definitely it caught my attention, you know, just his poise and everything. But yeah, it just never quite panned out. Lays on the ropes way too much. I don't know whoever told him he's good on the ropes, but my goodness, get off the ropes. You're not good at it.
I think that had something to do with his legs. His legs got tired, so he just leaned on them and rest. You know, he did a lot of resting on those ropes.
Cutting weight, yeah.
I had one more question, guys. I was looking on some website, and Amir Khan's name gets brought up with Terrence Crawford. Is like, who would y'all favor? I would favor Crawford in that one, but that'd be an interesting fight, I think. I wouldn't mind seeing that one.
I think Khan with anybody is interesting, to tell you the truth. You know, I know everybody bags on him. We make fun and whatever of him. But if you think about his hand speed, he's got punching power. And I think you've said this numerous times, Gabriel, that have we ever seen Khan in a bad fight? No.
Yeah, no.
He comes to fight. You know, that's one thing the kid does do. He shows up. He fights. He's got hand speed. He's got power. He could turn a fight over, you know, around quickly. We saw that with Marcos Madonna. I mean, you know, he dropped him with a body shot, you know, and he got rocked towards the end. It's just the guy, to me, is must see TV, you know.
And he's got Joe Goosen now. So,
yeah,
I think Joe is an experienced hand, and he's getting to know his fighter. It sounds like they've got good chemistry. You know, Amir seems serious about, you know, this leg of his campaign. He's, you know, I've never seen a shoddy Amir Khan, you know, in terms of his conditioning. I mean, I think I didn't think he looked good versus Canelo, like, but, you know, he was fighting well. People thought he was winning until he got knocked out. And that's the big thing, you know. Will you know, Crawford hit that chin? Will he be able to get to him? Because Amir's got good legs. He's got good tools. He's just, you know, he's got that Achilles heel, and it happens to be on his chin. So,
yeah. Yeah. That and Skype.
All right. Well, thank you, guys.
Wow.
All right, brother. Thank you.
Thanks, man. The comment.
I know. I was going to say, that's everybody's key. No, it isn't. It's only a certain amount of folks. All right, Triple G, Gennady Golovkin versus Canelo Alvarez. Finally, the rematch has been signed. It's going to be delivered in September and Mexican Independence Day. A lot of folks excited. Everybody was in a major, major panic on last week, Wednesday, because the signing was supposed to happen at noon. Oscar De La Hoya tweeted out, we're talking to, you know, BJ Saunders or, you know, or Danny Jacobs, whatever it was. And then Gennady Golovkin was sticking to his principles, saying, I'm not budging. I'm going to stick to what I wanted, what I deserve, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. At the end of the day, it happened. The novella boxing finally came through, and there's a happy ending after all, right? You know, I mean, here's some points here. When we get on our Leaving the Ring Gmail, you know, some folks were like, do you think the fight is going to happen? This is before the announcement. Do you really think that, you know, Gennady Golovkin wants to go after BJ Saunders? And I was like, okay, about black fighters not being entertaining. They don't like to engage. They want to run around. They want to do this. Remember that. There was a reason he shamed black fighters. So why were they so interested in BJ Saunders? I mean, BJ's not a black guy, but he certainly doesn't engage, and he runs around. He fits the bill of what Abel Sanchez was describing. So I never really truly believed that was the fight they were looking for. They're saying now that after Canelo, if he wins, Tom Lawfer, if they win, they're going to go after BJ Saunders. But to me, it was a lot of what Abel Sanchez was to make sure that Canelo stands and trades, doesn't want him to counterpunch. I mean, he even said it again in an interview. You know, I dare him to stand there and punch with my fighter. I didn't know there was a tough man competition. I thought this was a boxing match. So did I believe any of that? No, didn't believe it and stuff. Did I believe that Triple G was going to stick to his guns on 50-50? No, not really. I believe that, you know, in negotiation tables is, hey, you throw up the highest bid and you try to get as close as what you were looking for or better. And that's what he did. You know, and all kudos to him. He did exactly what we got, what he wanted, supposedly what he wanted. I honestly believe, and I've always been a theorist, is that Tom Lawfer finally called him up because Gennady Golovkin was in Russia and was like, dude, listen to me. We're not going to get any more. We need to take this. We got a lot already. There's a lot of money already on the table. We need, you know, I don't want to go to this horrendous negotiation with BJ Saunders if that's what really we're going to go after. But I tell you what, we're not going to get even close to the money's being offered to us right now with any other fighter besides somebody that brings the country. So the fight's made. It's going to go down. Canelo has a year layoff. Is it still competitive in your eyes, Gabriel?
Yeah, I think it is. I think, you know, Canelo, he'll be able to shake that off. You know, might, the rest might even do him good, you know. I think Golovkin is going to fight. Like people said, he's, you know, he's got a chip on his shoulder. But I think, you know, they probably had one. I don't know, maybe you should have had one in the last fight because they seemed to feel like things weren't going their way, you know. They said they looked at photos and thought maybe that the guy was juicing the first fight. They didn't, you know, he used an illegal rap on the night of the fight. And yet, you know, his fight was close enough that it could be taken from him and made a draw. So we'll see if at 36, Golovkin is going to fight meaner and tougher. And if, you know, Canelo is in his physical prime, is he going to allow Triple G to do those things? I mean, I think it's going to be a good fight. The first fight, not one that I, you know, I rewatched it recently, but it's not a fight. And it was more just to kind of so we could break down and talk about it. But it's not a closet classic. It's not one that I'm like, God, I really want to see that fight again. There's not even really great moments in it. You know, maybe the big flush shot that Canelo lands on Triple G and he takes it. But I do – that shot also, you know, we saw Triple G gets hit flush. And, yeah, he's got a good chin. But, you know, at 36, how many flush to take? I'm very curious about the fight. There's a lot of questions. You know, with Canelo in the 65 program now, you know, he's been tested, you know, he's being tested constantly, or under the threat of it constantly. How is he going to perform? Are people, you know, are we going to get a look into what a guy is like without his program? Or, you know, the people that say he's clean, does it prove it for them? Should he come out with a clean win? That's really what I'm hoping for, is a great fight with a clear, decisive victory. It can be close, but it needs to be decisive, I think. You know, we don't need a robbery. That's boxing's biggest problem is getting on a big stage, getting everybody's attention, and then screwing the pooch. They can't do it.
Right.
They can't do it here.
No, can't.
I mean, they can, you know, but I hope they don't.
For the folks that are just solely going to be watching to see whether or not was this guy really cheating and et cetera, me personally, I mean, I don't see any sign even before that. I always knew what Canelo brought, you know, and what I still see with the kid is that here's a guy that struggles with his weight. Here's a guy that struggles with his stamina. Here's a guy that still needs to have things a certain way for him in the ring. He's never been a great pressure fighter unless you're a smaller guy, you know. The question with Triple G is, what game plan do they execute this time? Do they same one again? Because what we've seen more and more, the older Triple G gets, the less we see the old of Triple G throwing body shots. And if that's something that they watched and paid attention to the first match, was that Canelo gassed out on those last rounds. I mean, not last. I mean, six rounds after that. After the fourth round, given more than that, he started to really slow down. Those are the things that I want to see. Does he attack earlier? Does he sit back and wait to see whether or not Canelo gasses out again and then picks up the speed? Because that's how he won the first match. He ended up picking up the speed. He ended up, you know, the pressure obviously did some good, but there could have been more, in my opinion. Like I said, the body work just wasn't there. Canelo, in my opinion, for those first four rounds, was boxing beautifully. He was doing everything that he's supposed to do. Counterpunch, move, make the bigger guy miss, and make him pay. But it was his condition that failed him. So to me, there's a lot of interest in this fight. So when somebody asks me, are you still interested in this fight? Absolutely, I'm still interested in this fight. I'm actually interested in all the middleweights right now. I want to see every one of these middleweights get in there and mix it up. That's what, in a perfect world, I want to see them all. Charlo, Andrade, Dermachenko, Jacobs, Canelos, Gennady Golovkins, all of them get in there and mix it up.
Yeah,
anyway,
it's wrap. No, yeah, I'm just 47, 160 to me are like my favorite divisions. I just, but even 54, I mean, it were hot. But, I'm just hoping that we get through this super fight. We don't locked into a third one immediately, and then we get to the business. Yeah, I want to get to the business of the rest of the 160 division.
I don't think the Twitter experts of the world can handle another third one. I don't think the experts of the world can handle another negotiation, you know, because.
Oh, my goodness.
Jesus, how people just kind of hang off of that drama, you know. Oh, my God, this has completely ruined my day. They're not signing. Oh, my Lord, this guy, you know, he cheated. Gennady Golovkin deserves this. It's like, shut up already, man. Just let them sign. Let them fight. They don't fight, they don't fight. Big, big deal. There's plenty of fights out there, you know. So,
and I'll tell you what, I still feel like, I mean, everybody gets really excited about the pageantry, like it's a giant event, and I get that, you know. But knowing that I'm not actually going to be at the fight, I'm just thinking about the fight, and I wouldn't have minded seeing Charlotte or Derevchenko. I kind of think that those guys were going to bring something. We would definitely get a knockout in both of those fights. I still don't think we see a knockout in this next fight. I'll be surprised if there's a knockout.
I'm hoping we do. I'm hoping that we see something. We see something a little bit more. If Gennady Golovkin does come with a chip on his shoulder, we might see a bit more aggressive, and we also might see a guy that does a little bit more mistakes than he did the first time around. You know, because as we know,
remember,
you don't want to go in there fighting upset.
Nonito Donaire, like the beginning of the end, was like getting named like Fighter of the Year.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it is a trend.
Triple G is, you're starting to collect those accolades. It's like, you know, in the entertainment business, when they give you a lifetime achievement award, like, uh-oh. So, you know, I'm curious to see, you know, at 36 again, you know, he is showing some sign, I think, Triple G, of aging, of slowing down a little bit. Not, you know, the punch output.
You know what? I might say that for next week's show, but I really disagree with that. And the reason I say that is because I've always said the better opposition you get in with, the more normal you're going to look. And if
that's
you look at Triple G,
assessment.
Yeah, if you look at Triple G's, look at his resume, and his highlight knockout reels have always been against 154 pound guys or guys that don't have a punch, you know. Not taking anything away from Triple G, but everybody made Triple G to be this guy, this killer. This guy's this killer, you know, and he gets into a Monterosi, and well, we kind of knew that he was going to blow him out, you know, but when he gets in there with somebody that can take it, I mean, granted, I had said that when Canelo jumped up, but this was before Canelo did, you know, they were talking about Canelo 2 years prior to that, jumping up to face him, that Triple G had grown into that size, you know, and frankly, we never seen Canelo get punched by a real puncher. And now that we have, the rematch makes it a little bit more interesting. It also makes all the other middleweights, him stepping in the ring with, a lot more interesting. Where before when he just fought Khan, I was like, oh, dude, come on, everybody would murder this kid. You know what I mean? That's why they're keeping him away from 160. Anyways, I'm your host, Dave Duenas. My co-host, Mr. Gable Montoya. We're glad to be back here on Monday. We'll be back next week at 6 p.m. Monday. Again, brother, it was fun. I'm your host, Dave Joyness. Gabriel, don't drink and drive because you will spill your beer.
I will. Peace.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros.
Hi, Mobley here, you know, from Carphone Warehouse. You're probably on a phone deal that sounded very nice when you signed up.
So does a euphonium.
But you suddenly realise you're paying how much? Delete. There are so many better ways to get a deal. Pay as you go, pay monthly, a huge choice of networks. Or keep the phone you love with a new SIM deal from the proudly independent Carphone Warehouse. They show you all the best ways to pay to get the right deal for you. Carphone Warehouse. We compare, you save.